What's up, my friends? It's Rick Mulready here. Listen, if you are feeling like you're struggling to keep up with all the AI opportunities, or maybe you're wondering how to even start leveraging AI in your business without all the headaches, the AIify newsletter is designed with you in mind, my friend. Every week, I simplify AI for you, showing you how to apply it and integrate it into your business so that you can work less and profit more. As one of my readers put it, it's a must-have for any entrepreneur who wants to get more done in less time. And they said there's a lot of noise out there and your information is up to date, yet just feels more calm and more relatable. So I want to invite you to sign up for the AIify newsletter. It's free. Just go to rickmulready.com/newsletter. That's rickmulready.com/newsletter. Welcome to the Art of Online Business podcast. My name is Rick Mulready, and I'm an online business coach, Facebook and Instagram ads expert, lifestyle entrepreneur, and I'm a total coffee snob as well. Each week, you're going to learn actionable strategies, mindsets, and tips that take the guesswork out of growing and scaling a profitable online business so that you can truly become an entrepreneur with impact. This podcast is your secret weapon for fast-tracking the growth of your online business. Let's do this. All right. What's up, my friend? Welcome back to the podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in and coming to hang out with me today. As always, I super, super appreciate you. Whatever you're up to right now, hope you're having an amazing day. Really excited about not only today's topic, but especially about my guest. Her name is Tiana Tai. And we're going to be talking all about how to confidently build and lead a small team of high performers. Tiana is an industrial and organizational psychologist, and she empowers entrepreneurs to build high-performing teams, to scale their business, and as she says, reclaim their zone of genius. She focuses on things like hiring, team dynamics, and leadership. And I first learned of Tiana because I heard her on a friend of mine's podcast, and I loved the conversation. I learned a ton. And so I reached out to my friend. I was like, hey, can you please intro me to Tiana? Like, I'd love to have her on my show. Because this, number one, this is something that I want to continue talking more about here on the podcast, but also it's something I've struggled with over the years in my business. So we kind of break today's conversation down into three different areas: hiring, leadership, and culture. And so from a hiring perspective, you know, we talk about things like, what would Tiana say to people if you're in a place in your business and you're growing towards your first 100K, for example, and you think you cannot afford to hire somebody? So we talk about that. We talk about things like contractors versus employees. We talk about interns and how to hire interns ethically. We talk about where do we find awesome people. We talk about onboarding and setting up people for success when they join your team. In the leadership section, we talk about how to make the transition from what I call the day-to-day entrepreneur to the CEO, the optimized CEO of your business, right? We talk about how to use some basic principles of psychology to be better leaders and create stronger teams. And then with culture, like, how do we create a company culture for our business when everybody is working remotely? Everybody's virtual. So how do we do that? How do we do team building activities, you know, for virtual teams, like team retreats and so forth? And we're going to dive into all that here with Tiana today. Love this episode. Okay. Now, before we dive into it with her, I want to let you know there are a limited number of spots open in my accelerator coaching program. Okay. So if you are an online course creator or you're an online coach and you're already averaging at least 5K a month in your online business, but you are now spinning your wheels, you are burned out, you are overwhelmed, and you're not really sure what next steps that you need to be taking in order to grow and scale your business even more without working longer and harder, because that's what most people do, right? They just buckle down and like, all right, I'm going to just grind through this. Well, that's when burnout happens, and that is not sustainable, my friend. If that's you, then my accelerator coaching program may be exactly what you need to get you unstuck and optimizing your business towards seven figures. I want to help you become the optimized CEO of your business. It's application only. So if you'd like to learn more and apply, go to mulready.com/accelerator. All right, my friends, without further ado, let's go hang out with Tiana Tai. Tiana, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Oh, thank you for having me. I am really, really lucky because in Atlanta, it is beautiful today. So I have just been in the best mood.
And you said that you're working on your back deck today.
Yes, with the carpenter bees, but they are keeping their distance. So we're coexisting right now.
Right before we hit record, Tiana mentioned the carpenter bees. And I was like, how big are those bees? And she held up her hand like quarter size.
Easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, thank you. Mm-hmm. No, thank you. I'll take our lizards and stuff out here in San Diego than over carpenter bees. So I want to start off with, I'm so excited to talk about this stuff because this is stuff that frankly has been a big struggle for me over the years. And I'm always looking to improve this side of the business. And as a coach to so many online course creators and coaches, this is by far the biggest challenge. Well, they always come with Facebook ads questions, but like this is the big challenge, right? Before we dive into all this, let's have you introduce yourself to everybody listening right now, what you do, how you help people, and kind of how you got into what you do right now.
Oh, good question. Okay. Always love to give the spiel, but in a nutshell, Tiana Tai, if you didn't hear him say it a minute ago, professionally, I'm actually an industrial organizational psychologist, which is a really long title that gives everybody like the deer in headlights look. Simply put, that means like my educational background is studying business paired with psychology. So understanding things like not only the psychology behind hiring and making sure it's a good culture fit and all of that stuff, but also team building, how to motivate people, how to give people jobs that are going to keep them engaged and fulfilled. And all of those very, I consider them like the human elements, the people side of business is really what I consider it, right? So yeah, I'm one of those entrepreneurs that actually went the super traditional route, went to college, went to grad school, ended up in a consulting firm, working with Fortune 500 pharma companies, like whole shebang. And I've always kind of had that like entrepreneurial edge to me. I was the kid in high school that like sold chocolate chip cookies and like all of that stuff, right?
But you held your own like bake sale, like yourself?
I had loyal customers, and this is so unhealthy, but they would literally buy $20. You know how much cookies you can get for $20 in high school? They would buy $20 worth of chocolate chip cookies from me every week. Loyal.
Okay? Wait, are you bringing in like a huge bag of like how are you?
I would literally just have like this huge thing, and it would have Ziploc baggies with two cookies in it. I think I sold them like two for a dollar. And somebody would literally buy 20 of those from me a week. And I would just come with a little separate baggie for him so he could take his cookies. That's and be amazing. On his way.
I wish we had that in my school. That's awesome. I love it.
You know, helping everybody's health goals one
seriously,
cookie at a time.
Seriously. You're making their days happier right there by doing that.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, in a nutshell, like entered into the entrepreneur space. And what's really funny, and I think a lot of people tend to do this, like you overthink how you want to show up in the space. Mm. So I'm just looking at everything, kind of getting the lay of the land. And for a long time, I was just like, I'm not quite sure how my skill set is going to be applied to this very, you know, startup or bootstrapping type of culture. I just knew I loved the energy. Personally, I liked it a lot more than I liked the big pharma energy, just putting that out there.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah. But I guess the issue that I kept seeing time and time again was there was this really big buzz around the word outsource and delegate. Like I kept hearing those words over and over again. And I didn't hear anybody talking about some of the more nuanced things that come with that. Even the less fun, less sexy responsibility that comes with that. So that's kind of where I showed up and fit in. You know, I teach teams, like building teams, hiring, how to onboard and train and give good feedback, all of that team building stuff. And then I also teach leadership skills. So how are we actually mobilizing these people to push forth the company's vision? You know what I mean? So that's what I do. Now I refer to myself as a team dynamics consultant because that is my favorite part of the journey. I'm not going to tell a lie. So I know we're going to talk the hiring stuff today because that is where we start, but it goes much further than that. And I just love the whole journey.
Oh, we're going to talk about that too. I love that.
Let's do it. Team dynamics consultant.
I love that. Just out of curiosity, what's your favorite book on this topic?
I'm like looking at my bookshelf right now.
That's what I always do when people ask me.
Favorite book on this topic? There's a couple for sure. I would have to say I really like Relational Intelligence right now. That's been my most current read. It's actually not even specifically about teams, to be honest with you. It's kind of like emotional intelligence, but applied specifically to learning how to characterize and categorize different relationships in your life. Definitely really relevant to any entrepreneur, but also to your team specifically. And then I would say my favorite, like more so team-oriented one right now is probably Self as Coach, Self as Leader. That one is really, really good, especially because I think a lot of us, as we're new in entrepreneurship and leadership, we tend to lean really heavily on that management side, which is so important. So that's the things like delegating the tasks and managing the performance and all of that more tactical stuff. But the leadership side is much like how we show up as coaches, right? It's motivating and inspiring and giving direction without necessarily like cracking the whip and telling someone exactly how to do something. It's a really good juxtaposition of kind of the duality of those roles.
I love that. And that's actually something I want to talk to you about today, but I want to kind of lead into that a little bit because, frankly, that's been my biggest challenge as the business has grown. It's that transition, and I see this with so many of my students as well, what I call like transitioning from the day-to-day entrepreneur to the CEO of your business. And or like I have a term, I call it the optimized CEO of your business. And it's really challenging because so many of us, for example, have like control issues, and we're not really sure how to do exactly what you just said. Like, how do I hire somebody to accomplish these things without being a task giver or like cracking the whip, as you say? Like, I want to get into that. Okay. Because that's something that's I see it time and time again, and it's such a frustration for so many people. I want to start with the hiring part, right? Because this is the part
Makes
where
sense.
so many people have a challenge. What do you say to people who are on their way to the first 100K, let's just say, in their
Okay.
business? And they're saying, I can't afford to bring people on.
Good question. Usually when they're kind of at that revenue mark, I need everybody to like take a deep breath, like woosah with us for just a second. We're not trying to get you to go hire a full-time employee who has all of the benefits and is on salary right now. Not necessarily if you're at that benchmark of like 100K. 9 times out of 10, what I'm seeing when people are at that revenue level is they're bringing in contractors on a part-time basis. So for some entrepreneurs, that may look like bringing in an executive assistant who contributes, 10, 15 hours a week tops to the business. And what's really, really great, and I've seen it be really successful, is they're bringing them in part-time with the intention of, if you're doing your job well, I can do my job really well, and we can scale you to full-time pretty quickly if that's something you're interested in. That's my first little tidbit of advice for you, is don't freak out and think that just because we're talking hiring means we're talking about hiring full-time employees. You can kind of take baby steps into that.
How does one decide on that? Because again, that is exactly what you just said. All right, I need to bring somebody on. I think I can't afford to hire somebody. But then it's like, all right, they made the decision to bring some help on. Then it goes to exactly what you just said, Tiana. I was like, I don't know whether to bring a contractor. Do I hire an employee? How does one start to distinguish what type of, is it categorization of
Yeah, it's like
person that you bring on?
employee classification, job
Classification. That's the
classification.
word. Yes.
Super good question. It does get into a bit of the financial, like CFO territory. Luckily for me, I just had a CFO on the podcast talking
Oh,
about
you
this
did.
exact issue.
Nice.
So, what I would say is initially, 9 times out of 10, contractor is the way to go, particularly if you haven't hired before. Most people do end up starting with contractors before they progress into hiring full-time employees. You can come straight out the bat and hire a full-time employee. I would say, from my professional experience, that usually isn't happening until at least like the 300K mark, to be honest with you. Just, money, profit margin, all that stuff. That's usually at the point where that starts to become an actual realistic consideration from a financial perspective. But I always recommend, especially if you just really lack the clarity into like your finances and whatnot, you do need to seek professional counsel from like a CFO or anybody who has line of sight into your actual numbers. You know what I mean? That's definitely really, really important, because when we start to talk about contractor versus employee, we're also talking taxes. And that's something a lot of entrepreneurs don't think about. Because when you hire an employee, now all of a sudden we're talking about you have to withhold a certain percentage for the government, like payroll. It gets a little complicated. You know what I'm saying? So it's a big conversation for sure.
Yeah. And there's also the legality of it too. Like, so for example, here in California, they're very strict on employee versus contractor. So you got to know, what does that mean for your individual state?
Do you have to like workers' comp? Are there mandates around vacation, PTO? Like these are state by state in the US particularly. Not to mention if we're talking international teams, that's a whole nother conversation. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But that's where things get very nuanced very quickly.
You also mentioned something before we started recording, and I'm like, we are definitely talking about this. Interns.
Interns. I love interns.
All right. Talk to us about that. How do we, can we leverage the value of an intern in our business? And if so, how do we go about working that out?
We definitely can. I know that there's a huge debate between paid and unpaid interns.
Yeah.
I have done both in my professional experience. Currently, I have amazing unpaid interns on my team. And I want to talk about that for just a second, because I feel like that's the one people are like very interested in. Because if you're going to hire a paid intern, that kind of just goes more along with hiring. So let's talk about unpaid interns for a moment. One of the biggest things, just like from a moral and ethical perspective, in my opinion, in regards to bringing on unpaid interns, is really taking time to intentionally design the internship to support their career goals, right? I'm never going to tell you like, just go to the local college and like grab this person because it's going to be for free and it's going to be great. It's okay. That's true.
It's one way to do it.
That's, I mean, that's true on one side of the coin, but on the other side of the coin, what are you giving to them other than just a title on the resume? Because while that's fine and dandy, I just believe that especially if we're utilizing someone's talents, knowing particularly in the online coaching and education space, we have very lucrative businesses, especially when we do them right, get coached by awesome people. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So to do something like that and to not pay, I really, really, really want to encourage everybody to make it worth their while. So I'll give a personal example. My interns are both, I call them my team dynamics interns, but they're both pursuing their master's degrees in IO psychology, which is the degree that I have as well. And so a big part of their internship is I also support them with ongoing mentorship. If they just changed their cover letter or they're writing their thesis, which one of them is working on right now, they can send that to me. You know what I mean? If they want to learn more about the consulting side of my business and what that looks like, or they have questions around my previous background working with like the big companies in consulting, they get me for that mentorship well as just like ongoing development.
Yeah,
so
totally.
Even if you bring in like a marketing intern or a social media intern, it's just thinking about, okay, what are your career goals? What do you think I could support you with to make this like a really even exchange?
I love that because I'm thinking back. I interned for the Washington Capitals hockey team back.
Oh, cool.
My senior year. And I was basically free. I was working for free. Let's face it. I love that approach and love like, look, like I'm here to support you as you are progressing in your education. How do you put together a sort of internship description to go to a school with? Without knowing exactly what that individual's goals are. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think of it the same way I think of a standard job description, to be honest with you. I think a big part of that is thinking through what particular role is this internship going to fulfill? You know what I mean? So if it is a general, like I'll use social media, that's an easy one. If it's a social media management internship, the people who are going to apply for that probably have some sort of interest in marketing or sales or something of that nature. So I would really just make sure to curate the job description to consider those things and proactively think through, okay, what about my company could support them with this? Or, you know, if I don't know marketing, but I want a marketing intern, because that could be someone's reality.
Yeah.
Is there a conference I could throw in and send them to as a perk? Are there different professional events that I go to that I could offer to bring them along virtually, in person, whatever, like times are weird right now. You know what I mean? But thinking through, just like being a little bit creative and thinking through these things.
And how many hours a week are yours working for you?
Mine are about 5 hours a week.
Okay, so not a ton of time.
But they do about an hour a night.
Okay, but you were just telling me that the work they're producing is amazing.
Oh, it's incredible. So my interns, again, they're pursuing their master's in IO like I have. Mm-hmm. And so they do a lot of the background research for my podcast. So literally, especially because I had two interns, let me tell you, life-changing. Because they started, I want to say they started in like October-ish. And they're long-term interns. Like they've been with me since last October. And because there's two of them, and I only do solo episodes on my podcast every other week, the content arsenal that they built up by the time it was Christmas, yeah. I was like, okay, let's talk about a new project for y'all because we've got like 5 months worth of content.
I'm set for 2021 already.
I'm good.
I love
it. It's incredible work and they care about it because they're in school trying to learn the same things.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I've always wondered about that because I've heard people talk about it and I'm just like, no, it's not possible or what have you. Of course, I hear people doing it. But then honestly, my mind goes to like the nuances of like, do I pay this person? Is it unpaid? Is it like, you know, that sort of thing. I love how you do it in your business and you've positioned it and how this is obviously going to help you, but it's really also about how you're helping them in different ways you can do that.
And let me add real quick, because interesting development, this has been over the past month or so. One of my interns wants to go like the more traditional route. So that's kind of what she's uncovered about herself via working with me, asking me questions, learning all the things. The other one has very explicitly expressed an interest that, hey, Tiana, when you open up a job that fits my skill set, I need to be top of the list. And I'm like, absolutely. I'm obsessed with you. Yes, ma'am.
she's proven herself.
Oh, yeah. Time and time again.
So it's a pipeline, if you will, for
can be.
A paid
if
position.
You want it,
it can be.
Be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that. You mentioned earlier staying on the hiring topic, like hiring based on culture.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Ooh, it's such a fluffy word sometimes. And everybody's like, okay. So
yeah, because I asked you because everybody has like a different viewpoint on it, but yet it's so important.
It is.
And again, something that we are constantly trying to improve in our business. So super curious.
This is a really fun question because I also have a background in like diversity and inclusion. Mm-hmm. So what I want to say, first of all, is when I say we hire for culture, I do not mean you should be hiring carbon copies of yourself and just like duplicating exactly how you show up and navigate the world, because all that is going to do is create a team of people who think just like you, which honestly, that harms creativity. Like we need some of that like tension and conflict, positive conflict to really produce our best work. Just had to put that in there. But when I talk about hiring for culture, one of the easiest ways I describe that is to take 5 steps back and just think about what are your core values as a company. And if you have never outlined your core values as a company, you can think through what are my core values personally, and then take that and leverage it to think it through for your company, right? Personal example, I'm not wearing my necklace today, but one of my company's core values is intentionality. In our job interviews, and I'll use another one, resourcefulness. That one's pretty easy to understand.
Sure.
So in our job interviews, we're asking questions that target that core value. So resourcefulness, right? Their ability to not pick up the phone and call me or email me every time something little is happening and they need a solution. So I'll ask, you know, situational questions to see what type of response they're going to give me. So I don't know, if I'm in the middle of a launch and the power goes out and you're in charge of social media, what's the first thing you do? And just see how they respond. Like I will leave questions so open-ended because I want to see their genuine response. That way I can kind of look at it and be like, okay, so yeah, they're pretty resourceful. They're good with communication because the first thing they would do is shoot me a text message, you know, And that can really give you a good perspective, a good idea on how well someone can personify some of those core values that are really, really important in your business.
I love it. And you have a download, by the way, on your site that's interview questions.
I do.
I love that. We're going to get all the resources for you where you can learn more about Tiana and what she's doing and how she might be able to help you later here in the interview. If we're ready to hire, let's say contractors, where do we look?
Oh, good one.
Because there's all kinds of places.
All kinds of places.
And you've heard, we've all heard everything, but like, what do you recommend?
Okay. So I'm going to give you two different perspectives on this one. It's funny, as an IO psychologist, our like catchphrase is always, you ask me any question, I say, it depends. And yeah, we're really annoying well, like that.
I say the same thing. Mine is, you got to test. And they're like, oh, it's the worst answer in the world. But it's true.
Same vibe to those two answers. Yeah. So it depends. One way to think about it is if you want to start sourcing from a pool of people who kind of already know about you, super lit up by like the mission and vision of your company and whatnot, you can utilize social media to source your candidates. People do it all the time. Mm-hmm. They'll utilize their Facebook groups, particularly if they're a coach with a larger community. They'll post just on their normal social media channels, all of the above, and that's really great. The issue, however, with sourcing directly out of your own community, for a lot of us, our community is built of other entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And that is a slippery slope, depending on your goals, right? I was working with a client the other day, and she explicitly did not want to hire she was basically hiring a co-coach. So they were going to come in, learn her proprietary marketing method, become a co-coach within her company. She did not want to hire somebody with another business.
Yeah.
Why? I think the reasons are semi-obvious. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So when it came to her, yes, I think she mentioned the opportunity on her social, but the entire application process, everything was actually promoted via LinkedIn. Because it was really important that she was sourcing from more of that professional community of people who wanted to work internally within a company and be an intrapreneur rather than being an entrepreneur, you know, learning all her stuff. And then, well, she's got contracts and stuff, so she's legally safe. That's also important, by the way. But yeah, so that is definitely something to think about because I just kind of touched on it. The other side is going the traditional job boards. LinkedIn, Indeed, Monster, Career Contessa. There's 1,001. LinkedIn is my personal favorite. Just the most robust, more than enough people, qualified people are on there hanging out. So it's a great one. But it is two very different applicant pools. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Now, when you're doing that, people go back and forth on this. Are you first looking to hire based on values and the culture? Or are you looking for values and culture fit and experience or knowledge of the field, like online space, for example, that you're hiring for?
Such a good question. It depends. It depends on how you are going to be able to manage your expectations. That's my first answer. Why? Because if you are hiring for culture fit only, that is super important. And they say that for a reason, because that is something that you truly cannot teach. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can influence it a little bit, but if it's not innate, it's always going to kind of be that little like tension, struggle, action going on. The challenge, however, is that if you hire for culture fit only, and let's do like two candidates, right? One has all of the qualifications, all of the training, all of the experience, but maybe they're not, you know, they weren't within your industry and their culture fit feels a little off. Candidate B, culture fit, rock star. They understand the energy. They're so aligned with all of your core values, just a beautiful candidate. But when it comes to their actual experience and like technical skills, they're going to have to learn on the job. Here's why I say it's all about your expectations as the leader, as the owner. If you hire candidate B, culture fit extraordinaire, I need you to be patient because what happens 9 times out of 10 is everybody hires culture fit. And then they get mad because they realize that it takes over 3 months. It takes darn near 6 months for someone to actually become adept at a job, specifically if they don't have ample experience and like all of that technical training. So that's where people are like, things are falling through the cracks. I keep having to repeat myself. I'm so frustrated. And it's like, I just wanted to hire them so bad.
I'm raising my hand right now.
Say it.
That is me. That is me. I want you to repeat that 3 to 6 months.
Yes.
And I'm actually having you repeat it more to me selfishly. Mm-hmm. 3 to 6 months before someone is up to speed and, you know, really contributing to the business.
Very much so. And to be honest with you, even if their skill set and technical aptitude is there, with like whatever systems, industry knowledge, all of that fun stuff, it still takes the average person at least 3 months to really start to contribute in like a genuine way.
Yeah.
But if they don't have some of those skill sets, 6 months minimum, my friend.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Get ready to train.
So that right there leads into my next question.
Okay.
And this is something that, I really and literally currently right now looking to improve in the business. And that's the onboarding process, setting new hires up for success. I know this could be literally an episode in and of itself, but like, what is the best way to do this? I know there's different ways. I know it depends, but it does. How do we best set people up for success when we bring them onto the team?
Absolutely. I am super, super partial to a 90-day onboarding experience. That's what I help my clients plan out when we're working. You know, sometimes I work one-on-one with them to like very specifically line up their onboarding process for like general company onboarding and or job-specific onboarding. So that looks like 90 days of what are we doing? What daily conversations are we having? You know, what training, resources, materials do they need to review, right? What I would say is first week, for obvious reasons, most important for sure, we always do a welcome meeting. Please don't onboard someone into your team and not introduce them to your team. I see that happen so often. I knew a VA, I almost cried when she told me this, but she was like, yeah, you know, I've been with the company for 4 months and I think I've been on Zoom with the CEO once. And she said, there's like 15 people in our Slack channel, but I've only ever talked to two.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
So we don't want to do that. You know what I mean? We want to do a welcome meeting. What not to do. Yeah. So we want to do a welcome meeting. We want to introduce them to everybody. And that first week, 9 times out of 10, is really spending a lot of time getting them up to date on your services and offerings. A lot of people find a lot of success by having people take their courses. If you offer courses, in my opinion, all your new hires can take your courses. I don't really care whether they're admin, sales, marketing, the graphic designer. Anybody will benefit from actually understanding at a deep level what you do and how you do it. You know what I mean? That's a really big one.
I love it. So just being very intentional, especially in that first week, but over it's a 90-day period as far as onboarding goes.
Mm-hmm. After the first month, the remaining 2 months usually are more in line with like check-ins and special projects to kind of ease someone into it. So if you can think about what a couple of projects that would be a good fit for their first couple of months proactively, you'll find that you're not like scrambling quite as much to try to find things for them to do. That helps a lot.
I love it. All right. Let's just say we've brought people onto our team. Mm-hmm. Now we're shifting into, like, as I mentioned before, we're transitioning from day-to-day entrepreneur into leadership, CEO.
Yep.
That's always often the hardest part, I think. And that's what I've experienced, you know, the most challenging part of the business. Do you have any suggestions at how to maybe ease that transition from the day-to-day to the CEO?
Really, really good question. I would say one of my biggest suggestions is proactively thinking through as much of this as possible. And if you're retroactively just like, life is crazy, okay, we need to get this under control once and for all, then set aside a few days to strategically think through what is your hiring process? What does that look like? How can we automate it? How can we make it rinse and repeat? Like, that's why I created my course, Dream Hire Bootcamp, is just because everybody was kind of just flying by the seat of their pants. Nobody had a process that they could just go back to over and over again, keep things clean and simple. You know what I mean? That's really, really important because especially as you grow the team, you're going to have to keep hiring. You know what I mean? That's not something that's just going to magically stop, right?
Totally.
Same thing for the onboarding and training. What is our standardized company onboarding and training process? And then what elements need to be present for job specific, you know, onboarding and training, right?
Sure.
So if I hire marketers or these people or that people, what little nuanced things, what different programs and platforms do I need to like grab the links for the tutorials for and pop it into my project management system for them to refer to? All of that stuff. I find that what really helps with the transition and managing the stress of it is having those systems and processes, the SOPs, everything from a technical perspective that you can have documented and systematized, it will help you.
But most people don't want to take the time to do that. What do you say to that person?
I guess you can come see me for a VIP day if you're really not trying to take the time to do that. That's why I offer them. But beyond that, sorry, friend, you can... One of the consultants I used to work with, she always said, you could pay me $100,000 now. That's not what my VIP day costs, by the way. But she would say, you could pay me $100,000 now or $1 million later. You're going to pay it eventually. It's up to you how long you let things continue to spiral out of control.
That's what it's about, guys. It's like remembering, all right, I'm putting this work in now. We always hear like, oh, I don't have time to take 2 to 3 days to do this. Well, You don't have time not to do it. Because when you take that time, get these types of processes in place, then everything else becomes easier.
Very much so. We only get busier.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the hope, right?
If we're successful.
Hiring, which is why we're hiring, right? From a psychology, from an IO psychology perspective, what are some like basic psychology elements, I guess we'll call it, that leaders can use with their team to be a better leader, to be a better CEO?
Ooh, good question. I think the first step is self-awareness, always. That can manifest in a lot of different ways. Like if you're really into the personality assessments, I'm really big on Enneagram for self-awareness. But when it comes to teams and understanding them, I have a lot of leaders. They actually built it into their onboarding process. Fun fact, they will have their teams complete whatever it is that they personally like. So examples, we'll see them requesting them to take Enneagram tests. Mm-hmm. We will see them requesting to take the DISC, Strengths Finder. I've seen workplace appreciation. That's one that I, have you heard of love languages?
Totally.
Yeah. Okay. So
I use that with my team. It's like a $50 license.
For
those people who don't know what that is, describe what that is. It's
absolutely great. So it's based on the love languages by Chapman. And love languages is all about learning how your partner, your significant other, your child, whomever, really receives love, right? So that may look like words of affirmation, acts of service, physical touch, gifts. Mm-hmm. And basically, in a nutshell, it's different for everybody. There's five types. Everybody has a different type. But what's really, really cool is they took that and applied it specifically to work. So fun fact, I believe when you take the workplace appreciation inventory, physical touch isn't one of the categories. We still teach it. Like when I facilitate, I still teach it, but it's not one of the categories for obvious reasons, because all we really do at work is like a fist bump, a high five, maybe a little church hug. Yeah. So it's not really that robust of a category, right? Yeah. But it's really, really cool. And it's valuable because especially if you come from corporate, you know this, when they give like the little recognition rewards and like they give you an award on stage and some people are like, I'm mortified when people look at me. Okay, they don't feel appreciated if you're putting them in an awkward situation. You know what I mean? So it's about understanding the unique ways that we each receive appreciation so that we can better motivate our teams.
Yeah, because most people assume that money motivates.
And
like,
it doesn't.
Oh, I'll just give them a bonus or whatever. Like, thank you for doing this. Here's whatever. Mm-hmm. When some people, yes, but other people, totally different.
Absolutely. And money, it's been proven. Look, psychology of happiness and well-being. I remember that course well. It's been proven that it plateaus. And really wealthy people will say the same thing to you. It's like the money is here at this point. That's not what I'm worried about in life. You know what I mean? Money motivates us to a certain extent, for sure. Our basic needs need to be met. We need to be comfortable. But beyond that, it's up to us to actually figure out what the heck motivates our people.
Yeah, I love that. I'll put a link for that assessment in the show notes for today's episode. Yeah. Like I said, I think it's $15 per quote unquote license. So if you give it to one person on your team, it's $15. You know, next
and they
person,
have an extended 15. They have an extended version for 20, and I believe the extended you can select remote teams if you're fully virtual.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. It'll give specific. Yeah, it'll give specific recommendations. Just because obviously, if you're working virtual most of the time, some things you just can't do. You know?
Yeah. Sure. Okay. I didn't know that. I love that. I'm going to go back and check that out. So in your mind, what are some of the characteristics of a great leader in the business?
Really good one. I would say one, I go back to what I said a moment ago, self-awareness. I don't believe you can be a great leader if you're not self-aware. It's very difficult to be empathetic and respond well to people if you don't first know who you are and who you want to show up as a leader, right? I would say, I believe listening with both ears and with your mouth shut is really, really, really important. You know what I mean? I feel like a lot of times leadership is looked at as some like top-down thing, but especially if you're an entrepreneur, I get really lit up about the fact that my team members can come to me with innovative ideas and there's no like bureaucracy or red tape in the way of me actually executing on them. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And it breaks my heart. And I've had clients come to me and say, you know, my team, they do their job, they do their tasks, but they don't contribute ideas. I don't know if I intimidate them or if, you know, maybe I responded negatively once and now they just don't trust me with their, like, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And that's a really sad thing. So being able to listen and hear people out and really keep the culture one that is safe enough for everybody to show up as themselves, really contribute their ideas is a really powerful thing.
Yeah. I want to start to wrap up, but it's a good segue into culture. This is so important. And I have so many more questions we can talk about.
We can talk for hours.
Yeah. Like this is, I love this topic. You mentioned virtual teams. So many of us have virtual teams.
Yeah.
Like how does one create a culture when one person's in Canada, one person is in Louisiana, we're all over the place.
Very intentionally. It's 10 times harder. Let me keep it real with y'all real quick. It's 10 times harder and it's different. Because you got to think about this. If you're not working in an office, there are no little moments for interaction. There is no stopping by your coworker's desk as you sip your cup of coffee just because you don't want to go back and sit down yet. You know what I mean? We miss those very human, very real experiences of just those little informal things, let alone actually having strategy sessions, you know, in the war room with the team face to face. Or actually doing collaborative brainstorming. We really miss out on a lot of those opportunities as virtual teams unless we intentionally build them in, right? No, I can't just build in an impromptu like little coffee chat. It's always planned if it's virtual because we're not just hanging out on Zoom all day, every day. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But what I would say is prioritizing non-work related engagement with your team is life-changing. That can look like my team and I, again, my team with my interns, mind you, my personal philosophy, anybody contributing to my business and my bottom line, you're on my team. I treat you like you're a full-time employee. They get company swag. They come with me places. They do all the bonding with us. Just saying. But we had a murder mystery party as our New Year celebration. And we drank wine and I can't remember, it was a bad word, but we were acting out our characters and literally like my intern calls me some kind of not good word. You know what I mean? Because her character hated my character. And I just learned so much about my team and their sense of humor and kind of just how they act on a normal Friday night. Those are the types of experiences that we do have to more intentionally build in if we have a virtual team.
Yeah. I mean, it's not easy. Like
it's not.
I don't think that I have done a great job with it personally, but I'm very aware of it and like looking for ways to improve that.
Real quick, I find that a lot of people, because we're busy also, mind you.
Yeah, sure.
And added complication, didn't mention this, but if you have contractors and not employees, additionally challenging because they have other responsibilities, probably to other business owners, right?
Yeah.
So they're not going to feel too happy about you being like, we've got to meet 20 times a month. They're going to be like, no.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so it's a little more challenging. Yeah. We do say if you can possibly like one non-work related experience, it could be an hour, it could be 4 hours, I don't care, but like one a month where you're just not talking about business. You know what I mean? Or if you can't even swing that, first 5 minutes of the meetings that you do have, make a rule, no business, or last 5 minutes. It literally doesn't matter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Open up a Slack channel where you guys just share stupid GIFs with each other. It does not matter. You know, we just have to find a way to build it in.
I love that. I'm actually going to do that today. I'm going to set up a channel strictly for sharing that. Like, all right, what are you feeling right now? Share it again. Yeah. Final question for you along these lines here is on your site, you talk about team retreats.
Yes.
And this is something I'm embarrassed to say that I've only done one time in my business, and it was several years ago. How do we do that on a virtual basis?
Ooh.
You know? Well, and also on that, I guess the first question is there like a level of a team, meaning like until you hit this number of people or what have you, to do a team retreat?
Easy answer. Nope. I think that the intention and the purpose of the retreat will naturally shift and evolve depending on the level of your team, how many people, so on and so forth. I break it down into like three C's, right? So the first part about planning your team retreat is really coming forth with the clarity. What is my company's overall strategic mission, vision, especially if like you have a 10-year vision, a 5-year vision, because we want to make sure we anchor everything into that. Everything should be anchored to that, period. I don't really care what you're doing, but team retreats, definitely. So beyond that, it's thinking through what is the purpose of this retreat? We've done retreats where there are legitimate issues and like the underpinning dynamics of the team. So communication is a struggle. Trust is a struggle. just like daily collaboration is a struggle, right? So maybe we're doing a retreat to address those performance gaps or what have you that come out of all of those underlying issues. Maybe we're doing a team retreat because you all want to do like this big launch and you actually want to do like a pre-launch, like ramp up session where you do a lot of really good strategic work, but we also build in some time for like relaxation and fun. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Maybe you're doing a retreat to celebrate a launch. So maybe if you bring me in as a facilitator, for example, maybe we're not doing like the heavier topics of like conflict management because we have a team that fights all the time. Maybe we don't, right? Maybe we did a really great launch and we just want to celebrate and we want to do more fun, but still team building and targeted experiences. That's where we would bring in things like, let's learn our appreciation styles. Let's do a whole experience around that and practice that skill set. You know what I mean? So the why can be a lot of different reasons, actually.
And completely possible for virtual teams.
Yes. I did a virtual retreat 2 weeks ago and it was fantastic. Their retreat, I would say like the overall theme of it was actually clarity, which is funny because that's the word I started with. Mm-hmm. But they lacked a lot of clarity around their roles and their swim lanes. People were like stepping on each other's toes. They didn't know how to tie their roles directly back to the strategic vision. You know what I mean? So workshopping live with them just to facilitate the conversation and help them figure out those, it was actually kind of like a technical team retreat, to be honest with you. Usually I would say mine are a little bit more on like that dynamic side. So how do we communicate with each other? How do we do all of those things? But the technical ones are important too. And that's harder to do virtual. And it was a slam dunk. So you can you can do any of this in person or virtual. One thing I gotta say, I'm running out of breath. I'm talking so much. But one thing I gotta add real quick is if you do a virtual one, we don't have like the cute funness of, you know, we're staying in the same hotel or the big Airbnb and going to dinners and this and that. So I do encourage people just to be a little bit more creative when they're planning the context around a virtual retreat. If you can send out gift boxes, if everybody drinks wine, send bottles of wine, little stuff you can do just to try to make it a little bit more of like a robust experience. Sure. That's always cool too.
Yeah. Something we should all definitely be thinking about regardless of the size of our business.
I've known business owners who, you know, multiple seven-figure business owners who fly their teams out somewhere crazy. You know what I mean? You'd think they're going on a honeymoon for the retreat. But I've also known business owners who are right at like the 300K mark or the 100K mark who do something local or virtual. It's all totally flexible. It's just about getting everybody together and focusing on something.
When I was in the corporate world, I was with a company that flew the entire company to the Bahamas.
Yes.
And for like, I don't know, it was like a weekend or something like that. And it was pretty amazing.
I'm not going to tell you a lie. This is funny. I've never said this on an interview. I am manifesting my client who wants to do a team retreat in Bali because I'm like, I'm there. Yeah. Let's go.
All right. Well, if anybody listening right now wants to do a retreat thinking of Bali as a destination,
I have manifested you.
Make sure that you reach out to Tiana and coordinate and she will help you with that. We're going to have you back on because there's just so many topics that we can dive into. What's the podcast? Where can people connect with you? Mm-hmm. Where do you want to send them?
So I do have a podcast. It's called Tide Pod, TYEPOD, not awesome. Tide Pod. But you can find me there. We actually talk about all of these topics, but in very specific detail. So you'll see like an episode just on interview questions or just on giving good feedback when it's actually negative, you know, whatever. Very, very specific. And honestly, if you know my name, you pretty much know where to find me. So on Instagram, I'm at Tiana Tai. Website is tianatai.com. You can find me all of the places, LinkedIn, Clubhouse, everything is just my name. So come connect with me wherever. I'm pretty much hanging out, talking about teams and leadership all day, every day.
I love it. And guys, it's TIANNATYE.
Yes.
So make sure you connect with Tiana. Let her know that you heard her on the show here. Tiana, thank you so much. This has been amazing. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your expertise with everybody.
Absolutely. This was a fun one. Thank you so much for having me.
Such good stuff here with Tiana Tai. Love this conversation. Love this topic. And she's so, so smart when it comes to this stuff. As I mentioned at the top of the show, just want to remind you, there are a limited number of spots open in my accelerator coaching program. Okay, so this is for online course creators. Maybe you're an online coach. Maybe you've got a membership program and you're already averaging at least $5,000 a month in your online business. and you're at a point in your business now where you're feeling overwhelmed, probably burnt out, you're confused about what next step that you should be taking in your business, and you want to have a bigger impact in your business, which, by the way, results in more revenue, but you're not sure how to achieve that without simply working harder and longer, because that is not the answer, my friend. So if you're nodding your head right now, then my Accelerator Coaching Program may be exactly what you need to get you unstuck and optimizing your business towards seven figures. Accelerator is both a one-on-one and group coaching program and mastermind, really. And it's just amazing. So if this is something that you're interested in, to learn more and apply, go to rickmulready.com/accelerator. rickmulready.com/accelerator. All right, my friend, thank you so much for tuning in today. As always, if you've not yet left a rating and review for the show over on Apple Podcasts and subscribed, that would mean the world to me, because it helps us get this message out to more online entrepreneurs, which I think in this day and age, enough people can't hear this message. So thank you in advance for doing that. And as always, appreciate you for tuning in. I'll see you right back here for the next episode of the Art of Online Business Podcast.